Hello and welcome to Ag PhD. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. We've got a great show for you. We're going to talk a little about micronutrients today. And I give you a little background on kind of what Darren and I do here. We talk agronomy every day, and we usually pick out our topics just a little bit in advance. And we work with our sister Janelle, who's actually running the controls for us in studio today. Anyway, our topic isn't just micronutrients. The topic that I got sitting right in front of me says understanding micronutrients. And as soon as I saw that, I just started laughing. Like, even some of the best scientists, the best agronomists in the world don't fully understand micronutrients. I don't know that anyone fully understands each and every tiny little thing that these micronutrients play a role in plants. We just know that they are very, very important if you want great crops. Now, they're called micronutrients because you don't need much of them. So we're not saying for you, as you're listening today, that you have to necessarily fertilize with any of these micronutrients. But on the other hand, you might need to fertilize with several. So we want to talk through that just a little bit today. We commonly discuss boron, zinc, copper, manganese, and iron as the five, the five most common micronutrients we'll talk about. Okay, but then we also will occasionally discuss molybdenum. Sometimes we'll talk about cobalt. We've even discussed selenium because selenium, if you aren't aware of this, is one of the things that they talk about in human health that's very important for resistance just dealing with COVID-19, for example. Okay, so anyway, we will talk about understanding micronutrients throughout the show today. If you've got a question for us or if there's anything you'd like to talk about that's going on in your farm, our number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, or you can send us a note on Twitter, AgPhDMedia, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. All right, so we will talk about micronutrients throughout the show. Right now, though, we want to get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
Well, ironically, Brian, we'll start with a micronutrient question. This one comes in from Lee in Montana, and he said, I'm sending you soil samples from one of our irrigated alfalfa fields. It's showing, in my estimation, low manganese and low zinc levels. Now, in the spring after green-up, we plan to apply a foliar treatment after each cutting to try to address this micronutrient issue and anything else that pops up.
Sure.
And there are products that just supply a single micro. And there's also composite products that have several different micros in them. Now, I assume the single products are less expensive per pound of the targeted nutrient.
Yep.
But they're harder for me to find for my local suppliers, and we don't have pricing information readily available. I'm wondering, are there factors we should be looking at besides just cost per pound of nutrient? My soil test is attached. Please ignore a couple of high sodium samples in there. We are aware of those, different issue, and we're correcting them with drainage.
Okay, so one of the big challenges is
all. Did you think you were going to pick on him there, Brian?
No, I wasn't. Well, we got a lot of stuff to talk about, but I was just going to say there is a lot of variability here. So even did he mention iron? I think he said iron is one of them.
He said manganese and zinc were the main ones that he was looking at.
Yep. I'll just talk about manganese and zinc then. So if you take a look at zinc, we've got 0.6 up to 1.5. Well, that's quite a bit of difference. That's 2.5 times more zinc in one spot than in another spot. So to me, that's a lot of variability. With the manganese, here's the challenge. He's got, on average, an 8 pH. Well, when you have an 8 pH and you're running a DTPA manganese test, you'd have to have, in my estimation, a ridiculous amount of pounds of manganese out there to show up in that DTPA test. And this is something we've occasionally talked about on the show, and I figured we were going to get to this today. I just didn't figure it was going to be right off the bat. But with manganese, we really like to see a Malic 3 test also, in addition to a DTPA. It appears to us, and I'm just going to throw this out there, it appears to us that the Malic 3 will give you a more accurate representation of what's really in the soil. Yes, I realize manganese isn't nearly as available at a high pH as it is a low pH, but I'd still like to know, Is my soil just short on manganese, or is it just looking like it's short because it's a high pH problem? If I also had that Malic 3 test on manganese, then I'd have a much better idea. Here's the other thing. With almost anything we do on the farm, to some degree, it's the old trial and error method that's going to teach you what you need to do to fix things. So we run a lot of data on our farm with many soil tests compared to yield points in all those soil test spots. And because of the thousands and thousands of points of data, that's helped us really fine-tune our fertility program. So for example, with zinc, we will commonly look at, all right, I want to take about an 8-to-1, 10-to-1 kind of ratio of phosphorus to zinc. Well, when I look at the Olson test, that's what we'd use in the higher pH, on average, we're at about a 20. Okay, so that's not very high at all. But even so, I would want to then, in relation, have my zinc at about 2 to maybe 2.4, somewhere in that kind of range. Well, the highest he's got here is 1.5. So yes, I would agree that there needs to be some more zinc out there. The challenge with zinc and with phosphorus and to some degree with potassium in heavy soils like he's got is going to be, how are you going to move that down in the ground when you're raising a crop like alfalfa? So what we would typically advise somebody who's an alfalfa producer is to do their soil testing before they seed the crop. And then basically that's going to carry you through most of the way because you can't change your deep soil phosphorus levels, zinc levels, copper levels, potassium in heavy soil. You can't change those levels by throwing more fertilizer out there as you go. And phosphorus isn't taken in by the plant very well foliar, so it gets to be a real challenge. Anyway, coming back to his question about adding a blend of micronutrients, I don't have a real big problem with that because a lot of his micronutrients aren't like super high. So there are some that are fairly good in spots, boron and copper, but it's not going to hurt to do at least a little bit of blended micronutrient. I'd probably try that. Pretty inexpensive, pretty easy to do that. Stay tuned, we'll be right back.
Your soybeans are in the bin, but the game isn't over yet. Score more points this year by taking your beans to the end zone. At $10 beans, every point of moisture below your target takes away 15 cents per bushel. Reclaim that lost yield with the end zone bin system from Farm Shop MFG.
The Pentair Hypro Express Flush Valve reduces plugged nozzles and improves cleanout of your spray boom. Simply flush boom sections with a quarter-turn ball valve and leave your tools in the cab. Plus, installation is easy. Simply remove the existing end cap plug and replace with the Hypro Express Flush Valve. Learn more at pentair.com/hypro.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
Acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, nobody scrutinizes performance like you do. And acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, the consistent performance of Vasgro brand soybeans helps to keep your profitability out in front, offering leading agronomic expertise and 100% exclusive genetics for strong yield potential. Ask your dealer how much further you can grow when Vasgro leads the way. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Customer service goes a long way when trying something new. Ryan Shaw from Michigan shares how Soil Warrior helped him transition to strip tillage in his operation.
The Soil Warrior guys, they are amazing to work with. They made this jump in this transition extremely painless. One question that I get all the time is, how is the service and everything? And I said, well, actually, I get better service from them than I typically do my dealers uptown. They're just amazing.
More info at soilwarrior.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. We're talking about micronutrients and trying to understand them just a little bit. We get a lot of questions about different micronutrients, and often we turn to our friend Jerry Willem with AgroLiquid. Dr. Jerry, thanks for being on. We really appreciate it.
Hey, I'm glad to be here as always. Thank you.
All right. We get a lot of questions about micronutrients. I'm sure you do too. Probably the one we get the most questions on is zinc. So maybe we should start with some zinc talk just a little bit. I'm sure you've been working with a lot of growers in corn with zinc, but this is a really important nutrient for every crop.
Yeah, zinc certainly is. It is kind of funny. I kind of chuckled when Brian was saying there, he saw that the title was Understanding Micronutrients. And that is difficult, but I mean, we can generalize about micronutrients as that they are essential. I mean, with the cost of your seed and everything these days and the yield potential, you sure don't want to miss out by shorting something that you know is going to be needed. And that's where micronutrients come in. I think one of the reasons that maybe they're kind of overlooked by a lot of people is, like a lot of things, you can't see what's going on in the soil or in the plant. You know, you just plant it and know that something's going to grow, but you can't really see it. And so that's where we rely on things like the soil test and tissue test and that sort of thing to kind of be our eyes as far as what's going on in the ground, because we certainly want to get the most potential yield that we can get. And you can't do that if something's short, and often what is short is micronutrients, and zinc is probably one of the key ones, but it's not the only one. I mean, there's some areas that are high in zinc, and maybe it's like up here, we're low on the low side in Michigan on zinc. We have to address it, but manganese is our key one. We can put on all the zinc, and I've done this. You put on lots of zinc but leave out manganese, and you know, you see a yield suffer. Your yield suffers, and so that's why it's important to try to know where you are and where you need to be.
Yeah, it's hard to know that. You're right. Without having some numbers and doing a little bit of testing out there just to see, and for us on our farm, it's really been eye-opening too to then layer those up with yield data, as you suggest, and see, wow, where my zinc is in good shape, it really helps me, or where my manganese is in good shape, it really helps me. Understanding what that balance is between those is a little bit tricky. What do you use for a guideline on that, or where do you turn to find out where you need to be at on each of these in comparison to the other?
Well, I guess we do rely on the soil test. I mean, on our soil, we kind of go by their guidelines. I mean, their established guidelines. You know, if they say that you're low, well, you probably are low or high or something like that. And so we know from our soils, like, we have lots of iron, and our copper is kind of in the borderline where we're always low on boron. So we try to make sure that we address those inputs. And I will kind of maybe mention something I've observed. I mean, there's been a lot of changes as far as fertilizer recommendations and fertilizer programs and that sort of thing in the last at least 10 years, maybe even less than 10 years, as the genetics has enabled these corn yields and soybean yields to a degree to just keep going up and up and up. I mean, I look at the U.S. average, I just can't even believe that, you know, we're closing in on you know, upwards towards 200 bushels for a country average. I mean, when I started working here at AgriLiquid, I mean, it was like around 140 or something. So to make those advances. And so a lot of the things that we used to do for what we would call a good yield back then is way different now. And that's why we have to make sure that we're trying new things, trying to learn some of these things. We have a wonderful product called Micro 500. That I know you're familiar with, and it has a blend of zinc, manganese, iron, copper, and boron in it. And you know, once upon a time, that would cover it. You'd be covered because we get a synergistic, the micronutrient elements help each other get into the plant, and that would cover us, and we'd meet that yield goal pretty good. But now that we're, you know, where we're trying to go 150 bushels, and now we're trying to go 200 bushels, we might that just doesn't apply as much, and so. Now we're kind of taking this, yes, we still will need some micro 500, but we're kind of piggybacking that with some manganese and maybe later in the year boron. But certainly at planting, we like to add some manganese. Now there is manganese in micro 500, and we promote that, and it can do a good job with that synergistic effect. But with today's yield goals, you kind of got to think a little different. So, yeah, I need the micros, but I need to make sure I'm addressing the one that's the shortest. And even with a product like micro 500, and that's the nice thing about it, is you can kind of customize it. And we had micro 500 and manganese on all our corn grass.
You know, you talked about the combo product there, and we had a question to start the show off. Should I use single micro products and just try one at a time to deal with these things, or should I use a broader approach? I know we've done the same thing. We've used a combo product like a micro 500 or a micro 1000 as well, just trying to meet a lot of different needs at the same time. But you're right. If we're really short in something, we may need an additional app, and we may need more than what we can safely put in furrow. That's another question we get a lot, and I know you're very familiar with this. How much can I put in furrow with micronutrients? Should I put them off to the side? Should I broadcast them? What's the best way to go?
Well, micronutrient on the seed in furrow has really not been a cause for crop injury like some of the other higher rate nutrients. I mean, we've gone well over a gallon per acre of the micro 500. Of course, I'm not that familiar with other company products, but we're spiking it. We're putting copper on, adding things like that. And so I've just not seen in a liquid form a micronutrient product cause any concern in the seed furrow myself.
Yeah, you're right. They're typically a lower use product. When we're talking about these micronutrients as well, how about compatibility? Because we get so many growers that are using an NPK type product. Do the micros mix fairly well with them?
Well, I mean, I always hate it when I hear this on the radio, but I'm going to say, it depends. it depends on the product.
Well, that's an honest answer, Jerry.
Yeah, well, it does depend. But it sounds like you don't want to answer, but the answer is that it really does depend. Not everything's the same, and know your product, know who you're buying it from, and that sort of thing. Ask for some guidelines on experience. I will say that all of our micronutrients mix with all our other planter products with the micronutrients of agri-liquid anyway, and so that's with micronutrients, that's not been an issue, but it can be. With some products. So just know what you're doing.
There's a lot of things here with micronutrients. We're going to hit several of the issues today. Jerry, is there anything else you wanted to bring up that I missed?
Well, like I said, it's what you don't see, and so you think you don't need it. But just think of it like a jigsaw puzzle with puzzles missing, and you can fill those puzzles with micronutrients and make sure you have a complete program.
All right, we're talking to Dr. Jerry Willem with AgriLiquid. Jerry, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Thank you.
We've got John with us right now over in Illinois with the question. John, how are you?
I'm doing great today. It's a kind of rainy day here in central Illinois, but we needed it, so I'm happy to see it.
You bet.
My question today is I have some CRP ground that's gone out of contract, so I need to plant a row crop in it, but the problem is that I have 3 acres of commercial grapes adjacent to it. And I plan on leaving a border around the field, so hopefully I can get that back into a contract someday. So my question is, how can I get this crop in without any damage to my grapes? I'm afraid to burn it down, so what would be the next step?
Okay, so first of all, when we're talking about grapes, yes, they are a sensitive crop. However, there are many products out there that don't drift much, don't volatilize much. So there's no possible chance I'm ever going to recommend dicamba for you. And if there's any 2,4-D you're going to use, you got to make sure it's the new Enlist 1. We really aren't seeing much for drift or volatility. But here's the other thing. It's just you really have to be careful about when the spraying is done and the weather for the next 48 hours after the spraying is done, if it would by chance be something that could move. So in other words, as long as the wind is blowing away from those grapes for 48 straight hours, then I would feel pretty comfortable about spraying. And this, it's only one spot. It's not like it's your entire farm, so you don't have to wait for perfect weather for your whole farm, but at least you would for that situation. If you got more questions, just hang on. We got to take a quick break. We'll be right back after this.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
When it comes to leading herbicide formulations, you know Nufarm. Nufarm brings you Cheetah, a high-quality glufosinate herbicide made right here in the USA. Now for use on a wide variety of crops with glufosinate-resistant traits, including Enlist crops. Its novel mode of action will manage existing or emerging herbicide resistance and provide fast, effective results. This means you can focus more on profitability and less on weeds. Nufarm and Cheetah Herbicide, here to help.
Your land is a legacy, a challenge from those who tended it before you, to build on their foundations. At Corteva Agriscience, we understand what it means to be the stewards of a legacy. We embrace the challenge of building on the foundation of Dow AgroSciences to maintain your trust, to bring new solutions, to help you care for your land. See how we can help build your legacy at rangeandpasture.com.
Fill once, plant all day. The Thrive 3D application system from FMC is a revolutionary in-furrow crop protection platform that plants up to 480 acres between refills. The Thrive 3D application system mounts to most major planter brands and can be yours at no cost with the FMC Freedom Pass program. To learn more, call 815-362-7747 today. Always read and follow all label directions.
Each year brings new and unique challenges to farming, and your operation needs to constantly adapt to meet them. That's why at AgBiome, we're working every day to bring you new and better solutions. Microbial-based solutions that protect your crop and help it reach its full potential. To learn more about how we're doing it, visit agbiome.com. That's AGBIOME.com. AgBiome, feeding the world responsibly. Partnering with microbes for human benefit.
The next big thing is here. From the system that brought you Roundup Ready to Extend technology comes a soybean like no other. Introducing Extend Flex Soybeans. Elite genetics, now with the addition of glufosinate tolerance. Learn more at extendflexsoy.com. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. No dicamba may be used in crop with Extend Flex soybeans unless and until approved, and no dicamba formulations are currently registered for such use in the 2021 season.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here, along with my brother Darren. Today on the show, we're talking a little about understanding micronutrients, but we had John calling in from Illinois right before the break, and John, thanks for hanging on through the break for us. Anyway, John had the question about, he's got some grapes that will be right next to where he's taking CRP out, and he wanted to talk a little about the crop he could raise right there. And John, I don't necessarily care what crop it is you're going to raise. We just have to think about the pest control in there, and I'm not too worried about bugs or diseases because there aren't really any drift issues that are going to cause an issue with your grapes. It's really the herbicide end of things. Now, certainly tillage could be done there, but, you know, in terms of herbicides, I just said absolutely I'd be avoiding all forms of dicamba, and the only form of 2,4-D I would even consider using would be the new Enlist 1. We haven't seen any volatility or drift issues out of that. Also, when you look at some of the products like, let's say, Roundup, Gramoxone, and Liberty, they don't move much. So, I mean, Roundup could potentially move just a little bit more than Liberty or Gramoxone, but even that, none of those products will volatilize. The only products I know of that I can think of that would volatilize that I would worry about you getting them off target after you've gotten them in the right spot. So, in other words, they could pick up and move. The only things I know of would be the old 2,4-D and any dicamba out there. What else do you have for questions or concerns, John?
Well, I do use Liberty under my grapes for weed control.
Yep.
So Liberty, I see, would be a good option.
Yep.
And I do, the field would be suitable for a westerly wind to blow away from my grapes. So
okay.
I guess I could use that.
Good.
And the other choice would be just to till it because it hasn't been tilled for years and years and years. There's a lot of roots in there that would have to be torn up. So
sure.
The other option, I guess, I could go with just straight pre-emergence.
Yep. Yep.
Okay.
Yep, you certainly right. could. And but keep in mind, even the pre-emerge sprays, we can have drift issues, and it can end up causing a problem with your grapes. So just make sure that wind is blowing away. And like I said earlier, I mean, it's only one field that you have to really worry about. Where's the wind from, and where's it going to be from? So you just have to be super choosy on that. I mean, let's just be thankful you don't have a whole bunch of fields that you have to worry about that. But for the one field, I'd just really pay attention to the weather, and you should be in good shape.
All right. Well, thanks for your help.
You bet. Yeah. Thanks for calling in, John. Appreciate it.
Let's head out to California. We've got consultant Paul Borges with us right now. Paul, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Right. Anytime. How you guys doing?
Good. Good. You probably get questions like that all the time from growers with sensitive crops.
Yes, they do come along.
All right, so let's talk about some of these different crops. We were talking about micronutrients today, and I know how important it is in our row crops with corn and soybeans. I know how important it is for our wheat crop, but you work with a lot of different crops. Are you seeing micronutrient applications every year in a lot of these fields, or are they things that you can deal with once, get up to certain levels, and be good for a while?
Now, some places, yes. Other places, no. But micronutrients is very important. And even like a strawberry or berry crop, because they're always touching the fruit for picking, and that means that copper is one of the most essential ones in a berry crop. Like on the Kinsey test, instead of being at five parts per million, we try to be closer to 10 parts per million, and it gives that skin a little more elasticity, and actually has better shelf life, helps on the shelf life also.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, you think about a lot of the crops that are going to end up on a shelf somewhere, and you see it. There are some that you can see from one producer, they last forever. And with flowers that you get, sometimes you see flowers that'll just last forever, fresh cut flowers, and others are just dead the next day. There's a big difference that you see from field to field.
Oh, yes, yes. And even like on our seed crops, like for melons and stuff, you know, We really push boron and manganese for set. You get a lot more seed. And on the even on corn, early on in corn, we come out with manganese and boron and do a foliar spray when we're going through the field to help get some more manganese into the corn plant.
No, manganese has been a common theme today. Dr. Jerry Willem was talking to us about that they had figured that out also up in Michigan, that they didn't put on enough manganese, it really cost them.
Yes. Yes. And walnuts, that's probably one of the more key elements to fruit set. The better the manganese levels in the soil, the more fruits that you get. You'll go from singles and doubles to triples and quads just by bumping your manganese levels higher in the soil there for walnut trees.
I know we've got a lot of different producers listening to the show today, and I would say this. My experience from our own farm has been micronutrients are really, really important, and getting to understand what they're doing in the plant is critical. But if we're short on N, P, and K and sulfur, we have a lot of other problems that might be bigger. Do you see the same thing, or is there ever a time where micros come first?
If I have other problems, I got to take care of calcium, phosphates, or zinc. I make sure I have a foliar spray with micros in it to help offset a little bit of what's going on, but you got to fix the major problem first if you want to build and correct the problem.
Now, when we think about soil pH, this is another one we get a lot of questions around, Paul, because I can say from our own farm too, where we've got our pH too high, we really struggle with certain micronutrients, and if you've got a super low pH, I'm sure there's a big struggle there too. How do you balance that out with your growers?
We go back to the soil test and see where the levels are at in the soil. And if they're high, we look at the chart to see what elements have a hard time getting in, and we make sure we add that during the growing season to it, and vice versa when the pH is low, which ones are the most affected, and we make sure we introduce those during the season into the crop.
With irrigation, I know a lot of the crops you're working with end up being irrigated. Does that present some challenges for micros?
Yeah, it can. Flood on sandy grounds, stuff could go pretty fast through the soil profile. Microsystems and drip systems aren't too bad. You just got small amounts, a nice amount that you can control the amount of product you're putting out there one time. So it makes it easier so you can spoon feed it throughout the growing season. You don't have to put everything at one time. You could break it down to three or four irrigations for the amount of product you're looking to put out.
You know, with the micros that we've been talking about so far, one that we haven't mentioned so far has been iron. Is iron a concern in where you're consulting with growers in California? Is there, are there certain crops that iron responds to, or certain soil types where iron could be more of an issue?
Yeah, we get some spots where it drops off real low, and we've dug down deeper, test the soil, you know, at a foot, 2 foot, 3 foot to see if there's anything farther down. And the places where we don't find anything down to 4 feet, then we make sure we introduce some iron in the season, you know, because you will get yellowing, and especially in trees, you can really see it, and in corn. I have it in both. But it depends on how you sample to find out where they're at, so you can fill in the gap.
I know we were talking with Neil Kinsey about some of the different micros earlier this year, and Neil said, now don't get impatient and think it's going to immediately all show up on your soil test. Some of these things take a little longer than others. Which nutrients would you caution us if we get into a build program here this fall that it may take a year or maybe even more for that to really show up?
Depending on the soil, if it's, let's for example, say you're really short of calcium, I wouldn't put nothing else with the calcium. Let the calcium do its thing first, get that corrected, and then you can start building the other ones in. If you put, like for example, iron and manganese on the floor, and then you add calcium on top of it, you have a big chance of locking up some of those nutrients. So I always look at what's the most important thing needs to be done first, which usually calcium, magnesium, get that ratio where it needs to be, and then you could build the other ones right behind it. Takes a little bit of time depending on the CEC or TEC of the soil, but it can be done. You just got to do it in the right steps to get there.
Yeah, we hear that so often that we have to be patient. It's going to take a few years to turn problems around, but that's good advice to just have your priorities set. And yeah, those big ones where it's so many pounds, like calcium, for example, get that out of the way first so it doesn't impact things like our micros. Talking with Paul Borges here in California. Paul, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on.
All right, you guys have a good one.
You bet. You too. Talking about understanding micronutrients on our show today and taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. We'll be right back after this.
You're all set with the 4x4 turbo diesel truck. How about some options? Spray and bed liner?
Absolutely.
Tailgate step and Nerf bars?
Gotta have them.
Tie down hooks and stainless steel toolbox?
You know it.
Tinted windows?
Of course.
Options are good. That's as true in the field as it is with your pickup. In addition to taking care of tough weeds, new Open Sky herbicide gives you more rotational choices than ever before and an easy-to-handle formulation.
Gooseneck tow package?
Yep.
Discover more Open Sky details at openskyherbicide.com.
The only innovation that matters is the one I need.
With NK Seeds, their R&D program actually listens to farmers like me, so I get solutions that solve my challenges.
With the support to make them count. Because progress means pushing my potential, and success matters.
Push your potential at nkseeds.com.
Your soybeans are in the bin, but the game isn't over yet. Score more points this year by taking your beans to the end zone. If your beans went in the bin at low moisture, you can naturally rehydrate to reclaim lost yield with the End Zone Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. At $10 beans, every point of moisture below your target takes away 15 cents per bushel. That means raising 9% moisture beans to 13 can increase your profits by 60 cents per bushel. Score more yields in the end zone from Farm Shop MFG.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
It's about time.
Applied at Planting, new Xyway 3D fungicide from FMC delivers foliar disease protection from planting to harvest. Active ingredient flutriafol moves from the soil through the corn as it grows for inside-out protection from roots to tassel. For season-long protection, choose first-of-its-kind in-furrow Xyway 3D fungicide. To learn more, call 815-362-7747 today. Always read and follow all label directions.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy. All the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. We've been talking about understanding micronutrients, but also getting some feedback here in the Ag PhD mailbag. We were talking about...
Oh, wait, yeah. I got a couple more things on micronutrients.
Oh, go for it.
Okay, so we talk very often about micronutrients here on the show, and part of the reason why we do is because... I know for Darren and me, we grew up on the farm. We took ag classes for years. We went to college for ag. And quite frankly, what we heard a lot of was NPK, NPK, NPK. That only gets you part of the way. Sulfur is not a micronutrient. It's a secondary nutrient, but that it has grown so tremendously in what a farmer needs to put on today versus years ago because of the lack of air pollution, so we don't get free sulfur raining from the sky, but also just the fact that our yields are a lot higher. Now, because our yields are a lot higher, and here's the other thing, not nearly as many people, at least in our region, are putting on manure. When Darren and I were growing up on the farm, we had livestock, so did just about everybody else around us. Everybody was spreading manure. Today, that's not the case. A lot of the farmers we work with are just crop farmers. They are not livestock people, and they don't have manure that they're putting out there on a regular basis. And the difference here is simply this. When you're putting out commercial N, P, and K, you're not getting micronutrients along with it. When you put out manure, you are getting micronutrients along with it. Now, that doesn't, I'm not saying you're getting the right blend or, you know, exactly the right amounts or anything, but at least you're getting some micronutrients. If all you've been putting out is commercial fertilizer for the last 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, what have you been putting out for micros? If you haven't been putting any out, you're depleting your soil of micronutrients. And yes, you still may not have reached a critical level yet where it's dramatically hurting your yield. But in a lot of cases, what we're finding is when we go out and do plant tissue analysis, and we did a big study a few years ago, I think it was on 650 farms. So it was an extensive ag PhD study. And what we found is, I believe it was 98%, correct me if I'm wrong, Darren, but I believe it was 98% of people were short on one or more micronutrient. 98%. Yep, right. Now, again, I'm not saying dramatically short. I'm not saying you necessarily are short. I don't know. But all I do know is, we want you to do at least some soil testing and at least some plant tissue analysis to find out. Because otherwise, you're going to continue doing what your fertilizer dealer is going to tell you, which is most likely N, P, and K, because that's what they have in the shed, and that's what they want to sell, and that's what everybody talks about, and that's what you need lots of nutrients. That's what you need lots of pounds for, is what I'm trying to say. You don't need much for boron or zinc or iron or manganese or copper, and especially for molybdenum or selenium or silica or cobalt. You know, I mean, there are a lot of different micronutrients out there, but you need something. So here, let me just give you a quick example. Let's say you had 200 bushel corn, and let's say you leave all the residue out in the field. Okay, so you're leaving everything out there except you're taking the grain away. In total, you're only pulling out about a pound's worth of micronutrients. Boron, by the way, is the most. Just the grain removal only is about half a pound. Zinc is just shy of a quarter pound. Iron's a little over a quarter pound. So you see where I'm going with this. You don't need much. So actually, your soil, if your soil was in good shape 10 years ago, it's probably not in horrible shape today, but you've depleted stuff. And so the good news when we start talking about micronutrients is, you probably don't have to invest very many dollars. Even like for Darren and me, when we started realizing, oh, we've built up our phosphorus levels, and that's great. But the problem is our zinc is not in ratio, and that's hurting our yield. And we could visually, well, we could see the numbers when we started running all the data, and it's like, ooh, I don't have to be real smart to figure this one out. I got to get my zinc up. Well, zinc's very inexpensive. I mean, even to go from, in a lot of cases, we were at 1 or 2 parts per million, and we wanted to take it to 6 or 8 or even 10, it was a few dollars an acre. It's no big deal. Zinc sulfate is dirt cheap. And we were talking earlier in the show about foliar. Okay, yeah, you can do a little bit of foliar stuff if you want to. You can use a blended micronutrient product if you want to in some cases. And I'm not saying that's going to solve all your needs forever, but as a little stopgap and, you know, just to boost a little bit of yield, what are you going to spend? $5, maybe $10 an acre? It's no big deal to put a bunch of different micronutrients out there. So anyway, well, our number one message all the time on fertilizer is this. You are most likely going to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions of dollars in your lifetime. Okay, in our farm, every year we average about $500,000 in fertilizer expense. $500,000. That's a lot of money. And our point here is the more data you have and the more you do some of this trial and error and just experiment with some things, the better off you're going to figure out how to invest those dollars wisely. So it's not always about spending more money. It's just about taking the same dollars, figuring out, well, hey, where do I really need to go? Okay. So I'll give you just a couple last things on this with some of the most commonly asked questions. Zinc. Can I and should I put a quart out there in my corn and do that in furrow? Look, I don't have any problem if you want to throw a little zinc out there. It's just if you've got really high yield, and especially if you're doing it every other year, and in the meantime, you're raising a great soybean crop in the opposite year, you're probably falling behind with that quart. It's time to bump it up to maybe a quart and a half. So I take a look at that. By the way, you can download the free Ag PhD fertilizer removal app, and you can see how many micronutrients you are removing with most different crops out there. Just plug in your crop and then your yield goal, and it'll tell you. So then at least you have some kind of idea. All right, copper. Copper is considered the disease nutrient. It's very important for stalk quality. And it also is really important when you start raising big soybeans, you start getting your yield up, your seed size increases, and that's all great. But if you're having issues with the seed coats falling off, that's very likely a copper deficiency. Copper is the key to seed coat resiliency. And copper also, super inexpensive. You can go get some copper sulfate, mix it in water, throw it in your sprayer, put a little bit out there, and what are you going to spend? A few dollars that'll cover you for years. And then finally, boron. We get lots of questions about boron, and almost every high-yield farmer will talk a lot about boron, in part because I want you to think about this. Where do a lot of the really high-yield guys farm? They have irrigation, and they farm lighter soil, okay? And in a lot of cases, they have a lot of natural rainfall as well. But anyway, boron is somewhat leachable, okay? Copper is not. Zinc definitely is not. But boron is. Boron is somewhat leachable. Now, it's not as leachable as nitrate. So it's not like you have to put lots of pounds out every single year or anything. A heavy soil can hold some boron for a while, okay, for a few years. But the point is this. If you are farming on sand and you have lots of rainfall and or irrigation, you're going to lose some every year. And a great corn crop, and for that matter, great any crop, needs lots of boron. So half a pound of boron just with grain removal only for 200 bushel corn, that's a lot. So I would at least be thinking about boron. And sure, you can go with some dry if you want to build up a heavy soil in a lower rainfall environment. That's fine. You can do some liquid if you want to. Liquid's just a little bit more expensive, but that may fit better. If, let's say, you wanted to run that through your irrigation system. Let's say you wanted to throw just a little bit of boron out there with some different foliar sprays you're doing. You can absolutely do those things. So there are lots of important micronutrients. We just encourage you, really look at those on your farm. This is something, you got to get the NPK right first, okay? But once you're doing that, take a hard look at these micronutrients. That is most likely your next step to high yields.
All right. We got a few questions here that come into the Ag PhD mailbag. First one comes from Merck, who says, thanks for your educational videos. I specifically had watched one about boron. I'm wondering, is it possible to add avocado, tea, coffee, and macadamia to your nutrient removal app?
It's possible. Somebody would have to do the work here, and I don't know who's going to do that, but Janelle, why don't you put that on our list? We'll maybe get Alex on that this winter sometime. Hopefully we can get that done.
All right, got a little feedback from Chris in Iowa Falls, Iowa. He said, I really like using dicamba. It's been a great tool for turf management.
Yep.
And because of dicamba, it keeps my lawn care customers coming back.
Okay.
Well, thanks for the feedback, Chris. We appreciate that. Yeah, the EPA was making an announcement on their intentions of relabeling dicamba today, I believe.
Well, no, they're not. They're making their intentions known on labeling dicamba for in-crop on extend crops known today. Dicamba has not been pulled from the market, let's keep in mind. Dicamba on turf is still labeled. There's no change with any of that. So the only thing that happened this year was dicamba on extend crops. So we got to make sure we're clear on that. And by the way, there are newer formulations of dicamba and certainly of 2,4-D that are much less volatile than the old formulations, so we'd encourage everybody to check those out as well. Stay tuned, we'll be right back.
Revitec fungicide from BASF has been specifically developed for the selective soybean grower who doesn't compromise. If you think good is good enough, if you're okay with just achieving rather than overachieving, if average is your goal, this is not the fungicide for you. Revitec fungicide, brand new chemistry, 3 no-excuse modes of action, 0 modes of compromise. Sounds like the fungicide for you. Revitec fungicide from BASF, that's smart. Always read and follow label directions.
Get tough on herbicide-resistant weeds. Add Tough 5-EC into your post-emergence tank mix and increase control of some of the toughest-to-kill herbicide-resistant weeds that plague corn, such as Palmer amaranth and water hemp. Tough 5-EC is a selective contact herbicide with an underutilized mode of action that provides faster kill and application flexibility for post-emergence control of key broadleaf weeds. Ask your local retailer about Tough 5-EC or visit BelchamUSA.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
You would never plant seed or apply herbicide with a 20% success rate. So why are you still applying phosphorus fertilizer with a maximum availability of only 20%? Double your phosphate availability and increase yields with NutriCharge from AgroTech USA. NutriCharge's patent-pending technology protects phosphorus from negative chemical reactions that tie up your fertilizer investment. NutriCharge performs across all soil types and pHs. Contact AgroTech USA or your local Van Deese supply representative today.
A history of success means proven performance, but let's call performance what it is. Profitability. And boosting yours, no matter what the season brings, is the goal of DeKalb brand corn. Backed by exclusive genetics, whole farm solutions, and unmatched dealer support, let nothing shake your perseverance. Ask your dealer how DeKalb brand corn can help you realize a future of performance. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit MortonBuildings.com.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're taking your calls and agronomic questions throughout the rest of the show at 844-44-AG-PHD. This one comes from... Boy, I don't see the name. Boy,
you had the entire commercial break to see.
Well, I saw it said Alex.
What were you doing?
Oh, it's Derek. I'm sorry. All I could see was Alex's name on there who forwarded
it
to
us. It's great preparation do here in between segments, as you tell. But anyway, go ahead.
So anyway, this comes from Derek. And he said, hey, good morning, guys. Quick question for your mailbag time. curious on relative maturity of corn. Say that corn's 103 days. What does that really mean? Does that have to do with the time from tassel to black layer?
It doesn't mean much.
And also curious about soybeans. What does a 2.1 relative maturity bean mean?
Okay, so let's start with the corn. Let's say you got a 100-day corn. The difference between a 100-day and 102-day is roughly, they figure...
Let me give you some numbers.
Hang on one second. Give me a second.
All right.
No, it's basically for each 1 day of maturity, it's one more point in moisture at harvest time. So that's what it amounts to. And other than that, I don't really know. There's no set standard. It's not necessarily a number of days because, let's keep in mind, corn matures based on heat. So that's why we have growing degree units, or we sometimes call them growing degree days. That's a much more accurate way to do this thing.
Well, and sunshine makes such a big difference too, because you can have an 80-degree day that's cloudy versus an 80-degree day that's sunny, and it makes a difference. So, for example,
it makes a much more of a difference with soybeans, because soybeans are much more photosensitive than corn. Corn is much more heat sensitive than soybeans. Go ahead.
All right. So when you look at corn, it just depends on which growth part of the growth stage you're looking at. From emergence to tassel, could be as short as 45 days, could be as long as 75 days. When you've got silking to maturity, there you're talking 50 to 60 days. When you're looking at 105-day corn compared to 115-day corn, it's roughly 400 GDUs different. So normally 105-day corns, we'd expect around 2,400 GDUs to black layer. 115-day corn, we'd expect around 2,800 GDUs to black layer. But there's a difference with hybrids. I mean, you can have hybrids that say the same GDUs to get to black layer, and they mature and finish out completely different, where one may dry down a lot quicker than another. That doesn't necessarily mean how you're going to dry down.
Yeah, and speaking of the dry down, I think I misspoke there. What it is, it's a half a percent for each 1 day. So if you've got something that's 4 days longer, that means it's going to be 2% more moisture. But here's the problem with some company saying 99-day and another company saying 102-day. They might be the exact same for growing degree units or growing degree days. So there's nothing legally that I know of that any seed company has to say in terms of that number of days. So there are some companies that are kind of notorious for this, where they'll call something a 99, but actually it matures, much like many other companies, 102-day corns. So it's not really apples to apples. That's why we would encourage you to look at the growing degree units or growing degree days. In terms of soybeans, we've always kind of figured for each one group in maturity, it's 10 days earlier that it matures. So a 1.0 is going to mature 10 days earlier than a 2.0. But here again, it's really all across the board. So earlier in the show, we were talking about trial and error. Unfortunately, that's really kind of what it comes down to with soybeans. You got to figure out what fits best for you, because there isn't some exact thing that you're going to know. Oh, by the way, the University of Illinois has, I think it's the University of Illinois, they've got a really good growing degree day predictor. So So you can just search on that. But it's GDU predictor, I think, if you were to just search for that in Illinois. And I mean, almost anywhere you are, at least in the United States, I know. Yes, almost anywhere you are, you can select on your geography. Then you can plug in what your planting date is, your harvest, your maturity, all that kind of thing, and it will show you if you have a good probability to make it. So that's based on the corn. I don't know of a website like that for soybeans, but at least that helps for corn. Wow, right. That got to be a long answer.
Yeah,
Go ahead. And
with soybeans, their maturity groups are based on latitude. So the relative maturity just tells you where should you place it within a maturity zone. So like Brian mentioned, there's 10 days difference in each maturity group, and that tells you where to place it within that zone. All right. Thanks for the questions, Derek. We really appreciate that. I got this one from Danny, and he said, I had an issue pop up this growing season that hadn't had before. Had a grower that planted some new seeding alfalfa, and he had combined two fields into one, and he didn't think pH was an issue because he had all the samples done on the one side, but on the side that he didn't, sure enough, we ended up with a pH that was out of whack. And I'm wondering if you have any tricks up your sleeve for raising soil soil pH in crop in season, because sure. obviously
just throw lime out there.
That can be a problem enough of. Yep.
Yeah, just throw lime out there, and the more it gets watered on, whether that's from irrigation or natural rainfall, the more that will go in. And I will say, if I'm reading this right, one of the samples says 5.5 pH, the other says 6 pH. Those are both way too low for alfalfa. You need that alfalfa, in my opinion, a minimum of 6.8 pH if you want to maximize yield. That's what the data has shown in the past. Get that pH up. It's going to pay.
All right. Thanks for the question. Really appreciate that. This one comes from Central Minnesota from Brian, and he said, I know that our P and K levels are low, and we're slowly building them up, but my dad believes that soybeans are a scavenger plant and doesn't like to fertilize soybeans.
That's fine.
I know that soybeans need a lot of P and K.
They do.
So my question is, could I use a coulter and side dress some dry P and K next to the soybean row, like 50 or 60 pounds?
Yes.
Or another alternative I've got is I could use some 3-18-18 in furrow, like maybe up to 3 gallons.
Nope.
What would you think of that?
No. A gallon, maybe. That's as much as I would do. Don't put much in furrow. We've seen a lot more harm than good many times. Now, we use a little. We'll use a half a gallon, maybe a gallon, of a low-salt fertilizer product. But if you want to get pounds out there and lots of them, you want to go a different direction. But, I mean, that certainly could help, too. If you say, well, I'm trying to do this as cheap and easy as possible, yeah, you could throw a little bit out there. If you've already got the setup, it's on your planter, you know, throw a half gallon out or a gallon. And one other thing that will help safen that is water it down a little bit. Throw a gallon or 2 gallons or 3 gallons of water with it. That's definitely going to help. Also, it's not a big deal if you say, well, my dad doesn't want to fertilize the soybeans. That's fine. Just fertilize the corn more. But yeah, soybeans have 1/5 the root mass of corn. They are not a very good scavenger crop at all. But it really comes back to how much fertility overall is there with the soil. And what I would do with your dad is I'd just go through the Ag PhD fertilizer removal app, and I'd look at your average corn yield and your average bean yield and say, okay, here's what we're removing every 2 years. You're probably going to be shocked by the potassium number. The phosphorus number will be big too, but you'll probably be shocked by the potassium number. But I just said the word average. Look at average yields. Now I would show him, okay, here are some spots on our yield map where we're getting 280 bushel corn and we're getting 75 bushel beans. I'd figure those spots and look at the removal in those areas. And then I'd go, you know, can we please take our yield higher than just 200 bushel corn and 50 bushel beans? Obviously, we have the potential when you can see this in spots on our farm. So let's start with at least a little bit of a build program, or at least be fertilizing for a little higher yield goal because we have these spots. And in those spots, you got to at least replace what you remove. Otherwise, you're not going to have those high yield spots in the future. So anyway, just a few ways that whole thing can be approached. Now, I will tell you the other method that this can happen, and this is what I did, and I don't recommend anybody does it, but you could just buy more fertilizer, charge it to Dad, and put it on the field, and then send Dad the bill later. I did that. I got chewed out, but we got higher yields, and then he quit chewing me out after I kept doing that. So anyway, again, I'm not suggesting that you do that. I did get in trouble for that, but I am saying that does happen on certain farms.
All right. Well, I like the true confession there, Brian. That's not a bad one. All right. This one comes from Jay, and he said, I had corn leaf disease issues this year. What fungicides do you recommend in corn?
Oh, lots of them. You know, one of the things, because of all these different rebate programs that have been out there, it depends a little bit on what else you're doing. Whether you're in Corteva's program, you're in Bayer's program, you're doing stuff with BSF, FMC is really good. I mean, there are lots of great options.
And when you look
at
the chemical families, we're often using a triazole and a strobilurin, or we're using an SDHI and
or
a
strobilurin,
or all three.
Yep.
Yep. So look at those modes of
action.
Lots
of great ones.
There's some really good products out there. And then, of course, you know, see which diseases are more common in your area. You don't mention which diseases, Jay, that you've got, but there's certainly some a little better than others.
Yeah, so tell us which diseases, and then we can maybe give you a better answer.
Thanks for the questions. We really appreciate all of them today. And thanks to you for listening. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.